Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. Today, we will be looking at the end of a cycle, and not just for Christmas, but for humanity as a whole. So we are Zooming as well as a hybrid meeting today. We're open for in-person meetings. Our doors opened at 10:30. And we're just asking anyone that comes to Theosophy Hall to join us in an effort to maintain a fragrance-free zone for the benefit of those with sensitivities. Looking at cologne, scented soaps, perfume, that sort of thing. And we always want to mention that we've been very grateful to have technology at our disposal during the pandemic and after. So we will be Zooming from now until. And so it's been a nice experience because we have met people from different parts of the country, different parts of the world. And it's fun because we have different perspectives on the philosophy, even though we're saying the same things. And we're all joined by the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which will be read shortly. And our Zoom protocol is based on that declaration, impersonality, anonymity. We request no cross-talking, raise your hands and direct your comments and questions to the chairperson. If you want to comment on something that someone said, please do not use their initials. You can just say a previous comment was stated, that type of thing. And these are traditions that will make other people feel more comfortable during the meeting and if they want to make a comment or ask a question. So we ask for us all to let us work together to maintain these traditions. And we'll now have the ULT Declaration read.
The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all.
So in order for the United Lodge here in Philadelphia, in order for it to accomplish these ideas, we have three meetings a week. As today, as we said initially, our doors open at 10:30 and the meeting goes from 11 until 12, and it's a hybrid Zoom and in person. Today we are looking at the meaning and symbols of Christmas. It is the last Sunday under the umbrella topic of cycles and cyclic law. The new quarterly periodical for the first quarter in 2023 will be coming out within the next few days, and it will list again all the talks and discussions and the topics, the times, that all of that. So on Wednesdays then, we started last week, we are a hybrid meeting again. And this coming Wednesday, the doors open at 7. The meeting runs from 7:30 until 8:45. And we are looking at Mr. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. And last week, we looked at Chapter 6 on the desire principle. This coming week, we will be studying Chapter 7 on manas. And that starts on page 52. And we did just want everybody to know that on January 8th, the first Wednesday January 4th, the first Wednesday in January, the library will be open. So we will be functioning normally again after over 2.5 years. and the library will be open from 6:15 until 7:15. And the meeting, pardon us, the meeting will start at 7:30 and run until 8:45. On Fridays, our roundtable discussion is from 6:30 until 7:30. We are looking at Mr. Crosby's compilation of his writings on Western occultism, and the chapter or the part that we will be looking at, all the readings for next week will come out tomorrow, so we can all read ahead of time for the meetings. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So as was said, today's class, we will be looking at the meaning and symbols of Christmas. There will be two short talks and then plenty of time for questions and discussion. So, so we had said that this was going to be the last class, the last Sunday class in our overall umbrella topic of cycles. So when we're looking at Christmas, why are we saying that, how can we look at Christmas as being part of a cycle? Well, we do know that Christmas comes every year, which is a cycle. But there's much more to the cycle of Christmas and the solstice than really most people, we think, understand. For one thing, this period of time is the repetition of the arrival of the sun gods on the scene. And there are quite a few of them, actually. And Adonis, Apollo, Mithra, Romulus, all over the world, there's Osiris, Bacchus, Isis and Ceres. They're all over the world, all different times. And it is said that it is each one is a repetition of a previous one. And the series, and we can look at a cycle of the series of our own rebirths. When we do the fundamentals on Wednesdays, we're looking at the second fundamental of law, which is on cycles. And so there's always a cycle. We can always see it, you know, waking and sleeping, that sort of thing. So the solstice kind of focuses on the natural cycles of nature. And the sun gods were believed to have been born around this time in honor of the return of the sun. And we will see with the next talk on symbols that many of them have to do with the sun, with light. And we are looking in a cycle, we are looking at the cycle of the return of the sun from its long trip and into darkness. And the power of the sun also begins to increase at this time. Christmas and the solstice is the time when the sun is turning onto its northward course in the northern hemisphere. But north or south, we're also looking at the idea of the spiritual sun, which emotionally affects everybody in the whole world. And we know how it feels when it's been dark, dreary days for, say, 3 or 4 days or whatever. People tend to be a little more sullen, maybe not quite as happy. And then when the sun comes out, we always feel so much better. So the inner nature of this rising cycle of the sun affects the entire globe, all beings on it, not just humans, but the lower kingdoms as well. So this is the spiritual sun, not the physical one. The true sun shines down on us all. So Christmas is universally observed. It's a holiday, not only regarding the birth of Jesus, but it also can be looked at as being a pagan one. It used to be celebrated on March 25th, but during the 4th century, Pope Cyril of Jerusalem had his bishops come to a decision to settle the date because it did move around, and 1225 was decided upon. And another reason why we're looking at Jesus and Christmas and also the solstice is that the Christian fathers also decided that by merging the pagan celebration with along with the Christian one, they felt as though they would be able to obtain more people into their meetings. So nearly all of the ancients celebrated their sun gods on 1225. The celestial star sign of the Virgin and Child was in existence thousands of years before the birth of Jesus. And the ancients thought of the sun as the life giver, the power of growth and of life. And they understood this to be the symbol of that true spiritual sun, the one light, the self of all. And we did want to read, and this is from the Eternal Verities from Mr. Crosby. And the article is entitled Christmas. It was on the 21st of December that the sun gods went down under the earth. The ancients thought to help the souls, the seeds imprisoned there. They remained there for 3 days, and they came forth triumphant in all their glory on December 25th. So we can see that we can see how this cycle, the meaning of light, came forth on the 25th. And we also need to know, because it came around, because of the increasing strength of the sun, there's also an uplift in spiritual, mental, and the moral nature. Our energy is increased, and we need to use all of these changes in order to help others. And it is said that with this energetic uplift between now and the spring equinox with Easter, this is the best time. This is why people make promises to themselves, to others, that they will do certain things, because our emotional strength is more, and we can keep these ideas in our minds so that we can accomplish certain goals, because it is this is the stronger period of time. And we can see that in the spring when there's rebirth, when the flowers are coming out of the soil, when these seeds that the sun gods went to regenerate do occur. So the earth passes through its phases, and man comes with it. And as a day can be, so can a year be colored. So we'll continue now with the idea of symbols.
So many symbols this time of year that we can only touch on some of them, but the greatest symbol of all is the sun. It's symbolic and it's real. It gives life and light, and no one would deny that. So the sun, though, is actually a representative of the central spiritual sun, which is a mystery. It's not visible. And so the sun can be looked at as a window or a mirror, perhaps, that is shining down on us all periodically, day and night. As was stated, this is the return of the sun to its northern course. And the solstice is on the 21st. That is, it actually means sun stick in a way, that it seems to be void of course for 3 days. And all of the ancient mysteries, the whole process took a period of 3 days, which can also be looked at as the mineral, the vegetable, and the animal, and then coming forth as human. So we have this time of year was actually, Christmas was, for the first 345 years of Christendom, when it was more or less a small and somewhat underground sect, still had many elements of paganism and Gnosticism and everything else that was going on, Judaism, everything. These are all influences from the Far East as well, because the Middle East was always a crossroads between the Western world as we know it today and the Eastern world. So there was a great melding and mixing of ideas. And Christmas used to be celebrated in the spring, the beginning of spring, which is now Easter, of course. But they're both a resurrection, as it were. They're both when matter comes forth from the womb of nature. The seed is one of the symbols. It is a good thing when there's cold and snow, because it nurtures the future harvest. And in the Voice of the Silence, it talks about being like that snow and ice, absorbing the cold winter blasts as they come, which is part of the whole process of spiritual growth, is to be there for others. So protecting them and nurturing the seeds of future humanity, because we are an evolution. We are not, well, we are evolving. We certainly are not nearly as far along as we will be through the whole seven rounds and seven races and seven globes, also known as the 49 fires. We're just a little past the midway point. 18 million years ago, we passed the midway point, and the involution burst forth into evolution. And we could look at that as a resurrection as well, a resurrection of spirit from the unenlightened mind beings that were lit up. And here we go with fire and light again, that the solar petries, the progenitors of mankind, lit up Manus, the mind principle. Now we look at the Christmas tree as the evergreen. It is, of course, it's evergreen. And it regenerates itself throughout the year, but we don't see the process. We don't even notice it. But it's, you know, those needles, they do drop out periodically, and they are replenished. So the tree also looks like a flame, which is a symbol of fire. We put icicles, those who bring in Germany about 500 years ago, the whole idea of bringing a tree inside during the winter time and decorating it, you know, with balls and with tinsel and whatnot, came about. And so, you know, many people still do that to this day. Some opt for artificial trees, but they are a symbol nevertheless. So we use the colors red and green, which are symbolic of fire and earth and light and nature as well. So the ancients celebrated this, and as was stated earlier, up until 345, the date wasn't fixed. And it was done pretty much around the time that Christianity became the official state religion in Rome. So, you know, they didn't want to see, they wanted to make it primarily a Christian celebration, and it de-emphasized the pagans, which of course Christianity took all of their symbols. Some of them they kept and some of them they changed. The whole idea of a unique savior being born can easily be debunked by anyone who cares to look in a comparative religious study. Many of the former saviors were mentioned earlier, and from time to time, saviors do come, saviors of humanity, to point the way, not through vicarious atonement, but if we follow their teachings and their example and incorporate it into our own lives, then we can, you know, resurrect ourselves from the fleshly, sensual distractions that we all have, because we're really not nearly as advanced as we should be at this time. So another symbols of Christmas was the three magi's bringing the gold, the frankincense, and myrrh. And so gift giving is a big part of Christmas. It wasn't so commercialized until, we don't know exactly what year, but it did become very commercialized, which is unfortunate because the gift should be, they should be simple and they should be necessary. And really the greatest gift is the gift of our presence, you know, not presence, our presence to others, to be there, not to just give something wrapped up and, like the latest iPhone 14, which is very expensive. That's really not the point of the gift giving. It should be a gift of our presence. Myrrh had to do with healing and cleansing and creativity. And so also St. Nicholas was around 500 AD, we think. Not sure of the exact year. And he was actually in modern day Turkey. And he was a bishop. He was a real person. They say there's no such thing as Santa Claus. Actually, there really is a real Santa Claus. We don't think he had a sleigh, but he went around and gave little gifts to the children as a sign of love. So I'm going to stop here because we can't, you know, the star, the tree, we've covered a few, the gifts of the Magi. There's many symbols, and perhaps you've come with some of symbols that are meaningful to yourself. So we're going to open it up now for questions and comments.
SL?
Getting back to the meaning of the term Christmas, the Gnostics were mentioned. And if there were any followers of Christianity in those early centuries who had a understanding of the esoteric teachings behind the symbols, what did they mean when they used the term Christ? Were they referring to a savior, the incarnated God or Son of God? What did they mean by that term, Christ or Christos?
Well, our understanding is that it's another term for your higher spiritual nature, and they joined it together with this idea of mass, which we think it just means a ceremony, and so it's a ceremony honoring the higher self.
Well, there's there's two terms that are very spelled almost identical, but one has an E, one has an I. There's the krestos, which is someone who is on the path, that is pursuing a course, a rigorous course of both study and trials to become an initiate. And then there's the Christos, which is one who has become an initiate and is enlightened. So Christ and sometimes Krishna is spelled C-H-R-I-S-T-N-A. And so that's a Christ, it's the Christ principle. It's that the higher self is enlightened. Manas is lit up, as it were. And Buddha means the enlightened one as well, as does Christ. So anyone else have something to add to that? Because we're certainly not, there's certainly much more to it, we think.
We have a chat. Were the three magi initiates or adepts?
That is our understanding that they were.
Any more questions?
So they followed the star, as it were. Okay, the Magi, which it is Persian, it means adept. It's a Persian word. And so they followed the star, as it were. And it seems like it was an astrological event that took place at the time. And there seems to presage and foreshadow the birth of great beings and initiates from astrological events. SL, did you have your hand up?
It was more along that line. We have heard that the adepts of different countries are all part of one brotherhood and would recognize when a great being was coming into the world, they would recognize the signs of nature. And it's interesting in that story we have of the manger, how all the animals gathered in a very small area. Well, it was in a small area or a retreat there in Nazareth. In Bethlehem, and the whole idea of nature responding to the birth of a great being is a very old idea. We see it in the story of Buddha, and we read about it in the Voice of the Silence. That they seem to realize, nature realizes and great beings realize when one of their own is born among them.
And we understand that there's the symbol of the star, and our understanding in regards to the star is that there was, and the reason why it was so big and bright is that it just happened that there was there were multiple astronomical events that took place at that time, and they all came together and formed this glorious orb that was so bright. Okay. So, SL?
Just follow up. So the Christmas
TK is.
Christmas tree was mentioned, and we understand that On the Christmas tree, there's placed at the very top, often a star or an angel. And in the voice of the silence, it refers to that star that burns overhead. What is the symbolism of that star or that burns overhead or at the top of the tree?
Could you repeat, please, about the question?
The whole question? Oh, we understand that.
No, just the last part of it.
Oh, what is the symbolism of the star that's placed at the over the top of the Christmas tree in the context of the voice of the silence, where it speaks of the star that burns overhead of each human being?
Okay. So the star is our higher self, the true Christ, that our potentials as initiates and adepts and even masters and perfected beings. And it during the whole sweep of evolution, not being until the seventh round where we're a glorious race of adepts. So it's a sense, it's like keeping your eyes on the prize, that great star that burns overhead is truly all of humanity perfected and joined together as a shining light and a beacon.
And it can also be looked at as the star is our higher triad, and it is looking down, the tree being the perishable, the perishable, the lower kingdoms, being the material portion, and that bright light, that the spirit, Atma, looking down and illuminating the lower portion of our being. So there's multiple things that can be looked at in regards to the star on top of the tree.
Did you have a follow-up, SM?
Well, speaking of that tree again, we know very often, commonly, it's a certain kind of tree that is shaped like a pyramid or a cone, and we understand. So that's certainly symbolic of the fire or the flame, which is always pyramidal. But the tree itself, we understand, is a very interesting symbol, especially when it appears upside down, the tree. And we've started to notice various places, Christmas trees being hung and decorated upside down. It's an interesting phenomenon. But what would be the symbolism of the tree then, the tree of life there? Any ideas on that?
Well, the upside down trees represents humanity. The root ball is actually our brain, and the limbs, or four limbs, are the branches, as it were. And the pentagram is, of course, it's five pointed, and we're five pointed when you think about the head and the legs and the arms. It is very symbolic, and that as above, so below is an expression, and we are reflection. And in a sense, we're upside down trees reflecting from above. And it's funny, our body is, we're not even sure why, but we're just putting it out there. Our body is like 70, 75% water, but our brains are 85% water. So they're even more soaked, as it were. And just as a root ball of a tree, you have to water it. There's more water in the root ball than there would be, in the rest of the tree, because it's nearest the source. So we're just putting that out as an observation and reflection, not really knowing the full significance of it. So, okay. If anyone cares to expound on that, we're certainly like to hear it.
SL?
Wasn't sometimes spiritual knowledge called the waters of life? Mm-hmm. And our root ball, or we might say our higher triad, our spiritual nature, is certainly closer to that and more, you might say, permeated by spiritual knowledge. But sometimes it does trickle down to the point, which is on earth, while our root is in heaven. And it reminds us that what we see of our physical nature is like the point of that upside down tree. It's only the tip of the iceberg. The greater majority of our being is invisible and much more spiritual, much wider in its influence.
Well, we know that if a tree is dug up, the roots oftentimes can go really far from the tree. We've heard where people's basements have been, cracked, and the roots start coming up through the floor. And the tree could be maybe 12, 14 feet away from the house. So the roots are the life-giving, of course, of the tree. And it would, as was said, the roots can kind of be likened to our brain and spiritual knowledge, because that is the life-giving portion of our being.
Another symbol that we didn't mention, which is mistletoe, which is kind of mysterious. It's a fungus, actually, that grows on trees. And and also the Yule log, which is the burning of the Yule log. And then the charcoal or remains of the Yule log were kept for the next year to rekindle this year's Yule log, which is a symbolism of eternal fire and light. And the mistletoe is considered very sacred by the Druids.
Well, it's funny about the mistletoe because it's a parasite. it's a fungal parasite that lives off the tree. So we often wondered how did that get transposed about hissing under the mistletoe? We were never able to figure that out, how it was a symbol for that. To kiss under the mistletoe is good luck. All right, we have another chat. Did Mary conceive Christ by Kriya Sakti, by the mental power of intense thought and imagination?
Well, we have never read anything to that effect. The virgin births, all the gods were considered virgin births. But we think it has more to do with spiritual purity than actual miraculous birth, not conceived in the normal way. We don't know if anyone else wants to elaborate on that.
So?
Well, as just pointed out, two of the chief symbols to the Christians regarding this holiday is that of Immaculate Conception and Virgin Birth, which is not unique to Christianity. And the more we study comparative religions, we do see that it relates to the birth or the inner birth. The adept or the wise human being regenerates themselves through the influence of their own higher nature made manifest and ruling and guiding the physical, so that the physical becomes an expression of that higher. And in that sense, the spiritual is born into this world, not through any physical act of procreation, but by union of our mind, our mental principle with our universal Buddhi nature.
So it's interesting that Christianity, it spread, and it spread by incorporating all the myths and traditions of the pagans all over the world. And as still to this day, Christianity seeks to gain converts by incorporating myths and traditions that are pre-existing. The only thing that Christianity, the only thing unique about Christianity is its claims to uniqueness. So, you know, but it has kept alive many of the traditions unbeknownst. Just like we know so much about pagan knowledge from Origen, who was tried before a tribunal, and records were kept to point out all of his heresies. But these heresies were once orthodox teachings. It wasn't until the Christian church in Rome became the state religion and became politicized that for their own purposes, they declared many of the once venerated church fathers, such as Origen, as heretics. But there's always been a rent in the veil, and it's you know, it's becoming unraveled as we see, as more and more people critically study the ideas and principles and ethics of theosophy, because theosophy is a light, is bringing light into the world that was not allowed to be printed or spoken of for the better part of 18 centuries. Well, especially, it's from Hypatia, basically from around 412, when Hypatia was murdered and the mystery schools were closed, up until really the Theosophical movement in 1875. There were expressions each 25 years since 1375. The last 25 years, or the last quarter of each century, there's a new spiritual impulse where there's more light that comes into the world. And of course, the Renaissance started around then. But it's a celebration of light and life and learning and truths and symbols that are, that mean something, not the ones that have been highly commercialized or that have been taught as unique events. Yes, so.
MDW had his hand up. I'll wait.
Pardon me?
MDW had his hand up.
Oh, MDW, oh. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, it's you have demonstrated to us that there is a physical phenomenon going on, and that it affects us. And the effect seems to be for us to be more giving this time of year. As a theosophist, how are we to interpret that? Because all we see is a materialistic expression of that giving. Is there something else we need to be giving?
Well, theosophy puts forth, and it's very plainly stated in our declaration, the idea of universal brotherhood. And universal brotherhood doesn't mean giving, you know, as was said about the expense of technology, because that's only temporary. What theosophy, as a living portion of our lives, we're looking at giving of ourselves to others, to helping, to listen, to smile, that sort of thing. It is not, we are not looking at materialization of these gifts, and they should actually be given all year round, not just at this time of the year. You know, helping our neighbor in many respects, some people who don't have money will give like a little voucher to an elderly neighbor that maybe they will clean their house once a month or something. You know, things like that, that are going to be helpful for people, not necessarily just material things, but of themselves.
So, yes, isn't that really the great gift, is our own presence, to be there for others, to really care, to care about others, and to put our cares and our worries aside. And we see that this time of year, and it's wonderful. And the astral light is strong. It's the strongest from the vernal equinox until, the solstice until the vernal equinox in March, or basically Easter. And this is where the power of a vow, it carries force. It's this is the ebb tide. And so if we take our desires and our wishes to do good, not to be good, as Friday's class we discussed in Western occultism, not to be good, not to think about how can I be good, just like little children are bribed into being good because, you know, that Santa's watching and you better be good, but to do good. That should be our goal, is to do good, to be there for others, to be present, to be sensitive, to let that light, this glorious light that's returning in the wintertime, to be a beacon so that we can be a light to others, to be compassionate, to be kind, just to really to be kind, to put everything aside. So this power of the vow taken at the ebb tide can do wonders when it reaches the shore.
MDW. Yeah. Unmute,
please.
I'll give to SL.
Oh, SL, go ahead.
Although not a symbol, it is certainly a means by which we convey symbols. This is a particular time of year when there is celebration by the singing of carols, or the use of sound in an explicit way to invoke the sacred of this time of year. What is the significance behind that singing or sound as it relates to our nature?
We're getting some background noise. Somebody needs to mute.
Do you need me to repeat that?
What's the significance of caroling and singing?
The sounds, the use of caroling is to help rekindle or invoke the sacred of this time of year. Remind us of that. So we were wondering, how does that relate to the significance of our words and our sounds, the way we speak, how we use that in terms of our better nature?
Well, we know that music can be very uplifting. There's the idea of the vibrations can affect everything. So the songs are, for the most part, spiritual in nature. And there's something very uplifting when a group of people come together and they're singing together and the harmony. So we just think that the idea of vibration, musical vibration can make us feel uplifted, and the opposite way, it can kind of rattle our nerves depending upon what kind of music it is. But by and large, Christmas carols are vibratory to the point where they can be very soothing and uplifting.
We'd like to read a quote from the esoteric character of the Gospels. It's on page 2. Christ, the true esoteric Savior, is no man, but the divine principle in every human being. He who strives to resurrect the spirit crucified in him by his own terrestrial passions and buried deep in the sepulcher of his sinful flesh. He who has the strength to roll back the stone of matter from the door of his own inner sanctuary, he has the risen Christ in him. And really, it's interesting because Christmas and Easter are really bookends of the winter time, and the astral, which is young and strong. And so rolling back the stone is an Easter symbol, but Christmas and Easter are so many similarities. There are many more similarities than there are differences between the two, and they're both times for to pause and reflect, and to use that quarter of the year where the astral light is young and strong, and the spiritual forces are there germinating just like the seeds are below the surface.
So we're just about ready to close, and we'll want to close with a reading of a poem from the Rig Veda. And it's entitled The True Sun. That which giveth sustenance to the universe and to ourselves, from which all doth proceed, unto which all must return, that thou art. In the golden vase of thine earthly body, may the pure light of the spiritual sun shine forth, that thou mayest know the truth and do thy whole duty on thy journey back to the sacred seat.
So we are going to adjourn now. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year as well. Bye all.
Bye all.